Hello, and welcome to Holden Village. Today is June 8th, 2006. Our session is entitled, Creating a Life of Living the Art. Do you make a living doing that? Our presenter is Nadine Sanders. Session number SAN 2006-2. Let's listen in.
This is Marilyn, and now Marilyn's going to introduce somebody she knows.
This is David.
That's Larry.
And this is my dad, Jonathan, and my brother-in-law, Dan.
And then since they might not know anybody else here, you get to introduce one more person.
This is Michael.
Thank you, guys.
And I overheard that this is Wayne.
Right. And this is Marcy.
Great.
And that's Quentin.
Quentin, yes. Excellent. Okay, thank you. Thank you. On my path of my journey as an artist and musician, one of the paths started right here in this room. In, I think it was February night of 1989. And I heard the folk singer and songwriter Linda Allen. She did this song. And the names of the patterns you'll hear are names of traditional quilting patterns and also names of traditional native coastal people's basket patterns. Stories and to me that there is a link between making things with your hands and making music. And up to that point, I've never considered myself an artist. I like to make things, and I'd been doing that since I was a small child. My mother made sure my hands were always busy with good work. But that really started me thinking, and I've kept on that path, exploring and helping people make connections between making things with their hands and making music or performance art. I think those kinds of art are very much connected and belong together. Well, I'm not going to talk so much tonight about what I do, but how I go about creating this life. And when I even say the word artist, I kind of tremble, because artist is just this huge, loaded word. Maybe because popular culture right now, the Da Vinci Code. If you haven't heard of that movie or that book, then you probably have been living in a cave. But, you know, we think artist, Leonardo da Vinci. So right now, I want you to turn to the person around you or close to you, or I guess, Ralph, she doesn't like you anymore. I mean,
she just moved to him.
So I want you to just turn to the person closest to you. And when I say the word artist, I just want you to share what comes to mind. Whatever that is, art, artist, please dialogue with someone near you.
Sculpture, museums, and oh, you're here too. Okay.
One of your
favorites?
It's something that I consider the origin of
music.
Artist. I think of music.
I think of crafts.
Dad built our house.
Why can you give somebody gift some fashion, whether it's music or TV or whatever else? I think it's such a closet so much. I say if somebody's an artist, I think so.
You're married to the klutz.
How about someone expressive?
What are the things
they can express themselves?
Express
how they feel. Because
writers, I guess.
I can't do it. I put it to the back.
Drama.
I love it.
Opera.
I don't think of it
all. All those different things.
I feel like I can do anything.
Somehow, this is something a person has with them. This ability to see things
she doesn't consider it art. In fact, she doesn't value it all that much at all. She's really.
And then well, as I said, it's a loaded word.
It's just like driving up here with all those dogwood trees in bloom. I mean, that's fantastic.
So this is one of those conversations that I want you to continue with other people. Other people. Does anybody here consider themselves, if someone says, what do you do? Does anyone answer, I'm an artist? Can you say that? Mm-hmm. I don't always even say that. I say, oh, I teach. But I feel this great urge in our culture right now. I get to travel all around the country and sometimes other countries, helping people realize they're creative and help them develop their skills. And I keep hearing these same things. Most of my students these days are retired women. And many have spent their lives and careers and raising families both. And I hear this over and over. There's so many things I want to try, places to travel, that I'll have to live to be 150 to do half of them or something like that. Or I find mature people saying to me, I wish I would have discovered when I was a lot younger. Someone said that to me at Holden just a few days ago. Or I hear young people, because I've worked with lots of young people, and they say something like, well, I really like to play my guitar, but my parents say I can't make a living doing that. Oh, and I just cry inside. And I just say, oh, well, you can. So there's lots of ideas about why this is, people are feeling this these days, but you can come to your own conclusions about that. I just think people are realizing that life is so short and it's so fast that when you go around this time, you better try to do what you feel is part of, is coming out of the deepest part of you. So the other thing I always ask people, then people ask me, well, what do you do? And I try to explain, and they always say, do you make a living doing that? Mm. Most of the time, I won't answer them straight. I'll say, well, how do you define making a living? And that's usually what I think about, because I probably have a pretty different definition than many people, but maybe not so different from where you folks are here. And then the other thing is, people think, oh, it's so romantic that you make music and you make things, and it's really not, because the making thing, that's maybe the easiest, but all the work is trying to get people to listen, or trying to get people to look at, or trying to get people to take a class. That's really how I spend my time, like making cookies. Which I rather enjoy doing with it. So I've divided this up into some topics, and I may skip some of them, so I won't tell you how many there actually are. But I'm going to keep asking you to dialogue when I come up to some points here. And how many of you have friends, children, neighbors, relatives who do, quote, unquote, make a living, or they spend the majority of their time making music or making art or doing dance? Do you all know somebody? And, you know, most of the time I find people who do this, we've done many things before. Like before I even went to art school, I worked for nonprofit schools, restaurants, retail, 2 winters at Holden. I got a pretty good idea. Worked on a farm all growing up, of all the things out there. But I knew I wanted to make things. And I knew I didn't have the innate skills to make all the things I wanted. So I chose the path of going to school. Some people just focus and teach themselves and work with a mentor or an apprentice, but that's what I felt I needed to do. And when I came out of school, art school, I knew that I wanted to weave. I knew that somehow I was going to try to do that. So I started a production line, making placemats. That was interesting. And then I did some home furnishings. I got some commissions. See, that's the thing. When you get out of school, you're all idealistic, and you don't know what's possible or not, so you just start trying things. Doors open up, amazingly enough. But, you know, it was six years after I got out of school and was doing things with art and teaching and all this stuff that I made a business plan. I think, wow, how did I get along for 6 years? How did I pay the bills? But that was a really fine thing to do, and I don't always stick to it, but I have 3, 5, and 10 year business plan, and I go and update it every once in a while, and I go and laugh at it once in a while. But usually if you're a creative person, and I know you're all creative people because you're Holden and there's something calling you here in your spirit, we all probably have more ideas than we're ever going to get to. So I like to look at that plan, and then I go, oh, I did that. I did that 2 years ago, or this actually happened, or it helps me realize that I am really spinning. I am moving. It might not be like this. Sometimes it's like this, and then I spin around here, but I am moving. So for me, that was really helpful. How many of you have owned a business? Ah, yes. Did you have a business plan?
What's that?
Owning a business?
No. No? Yes.
Owning a business.
Yeah. So I think anytime you own a business, whether it's you're a contractor or a restaurant or, I don't know, pet cemeteries, there's a certain amount of creativity it's going to take to keep your business going, whether you have a business plan or however else you do it. So I think that was helpful for me. Funding. Bartering, buying, going into debt, grants, and all this stuff. I was at this seminar early in my career, and there was this noted fiber authority there, Jack Leonard Larson, and I asked him about how working artists should fund themselves until the sale of their artwork pays the bills. And he looked at me and he said, well, I was hoping he had some magical answer, but he said something very practical. He said, I think you should have a trade. Something in the arts if possible, but if not, that's okay, and do that half the day for pay, and then do your artwork the other half of the day. And I was like, oh, that's pretty practical. And I realized I'd been doing that, because when I first got out of school, I knew I could teach music lessons. So I started being the itinerant music teacher, and I went to people's homes and I taught the piano. Well, eventually I was doing that 5 days a week, which wasn't half time, but it was rewarding, and it was in art. It made me a better musician teaching it. But I often thought, I sure wish I would have gotten a practical trade like electrician or plumber or carpenter or automotive mechanics or something. And there's a school in near Asheville, North Carolina, called Warren Wilson. Has anyone heard of this place? It's a liberal arts college. As part of the education there, you learn a trade, and you work in that trade like an apprentice or journeyman for your school, to get your degree, whatever your liberal arts degree is. And they still do this. I think it's quite a fine thing. It's in Black Mountain, North Carolina. And I was really happy for the winters I was at Holden because I got great kitchen experience. And now I often, talking about bartering, I barter my way to music camps by cooking in the kitchen, and I get my, you should get my fees waived. So that's a good skill. And it was Holden, too, where people first started talking about bartering and energy exchanges and things. And of course, at Holden, you're on winter staff and nobody has much money. But there's stuff you need. So we quickly found, like, okay, Wendy could cut our hair and I could hem her pants. And so Holden was a great eye-opener for me about bartering. And one of the other interesting things I realized that came out of Holden was when you have a business and if you're trying to grow, you often can't do it yourself, so you need physical help. But I didn't have the capital. So I was like, well, how could I do this? I really need some help. And I thought, well, I'll try what Holden offers, room and board in exchange for labor. And would you believe it worked for 5 years? And I live in a small town in Southwest Washington, and I had 4 or 5 different people who did this, 24 hours a week of work in exchange, I gave them room and board. I would have never thought of that had I not lived this way at Holden Village. And then there's also that thing about paying cash versus going into debt. How many of you grew up with the saying, if you want something, you know, save up until you can afford it. If you want it bad enough, then pay cash, right? Cash on the barrel. That's how I grew up. And I think for some people, that's still probably a really good idea, because debt is not easy for some people to manage. But there came to a point where I had visions and I wanted to do things that I couldn't imagine how long it would take to save the money to do. So I talked to some good friends who were savvy with their money, and they talked to me about my habits, and they said, I think you could go into debt. So I did, I took that plunge. And that was a good lesson for me, that sometimes if you want to grow and you want to go out there and do things and change things and make things happen, that it's okay if you need some help from the bank or from somebody. And for me, that was a positive thing. Of course, it also helped that the interest rates went down just about the time I got that second mortgage on my home. And by the time I paid it off, they started going up. So timing was good on that one. And then there's this thing about grants. I've only ever gotten one, but I bet you all know people who are really good. School districts, many school districts these days have grant writers because many teachers and educational programs need to get special funding. And Holden, does Holden have a grant writer? Yeah. Who, somebody, no?
Yes.
Yes?
Yeah.
Okay. So believe it or not, people think, we're living in this administration in this time when art isn't very valued and they keep taking money away from the NEA. However, if you go to look, there are tons of grants and fellowships out there. But the key is you have to be creating and working with the kind of population people want to fund right now. So that hasn't been a way I've done it. But I know for many creative people, my friend in social work, she's a great grant writer, and she gets her grants all the time.
Same in the field of environmental restoration.
Yes.
There's millions of dollars of grant funds available if you're working with a nonprofit.
Another one would be multicultural, people combining cultures and combining ages, multi-generational programs, and then like inner city and rural underserved, mm-hmm. you know, you know, my best tool for getting resources, getting help is in my work has been word of mouth. And for that, I had to have a really clear vision of what I wanted to do and why I thought it was important. It could serve the world and help people. And once I got those statements, I practiced them on my friend. Then I was able to go and people said, what do you do or what do you want to do? I would clearly say that. And it doesn't sound like begging when you're really clear. It really sounds like, this is my purpose, this is my intention, and here's where I'm going. And sometimes you don't even have to say, would you like to help? and believe it or not, that if you believe in what you do, it's amazing what you can, the kind of help that's out there, if you're bold enough to state it and speak about it. So, right now I'd like you to discuss with each other what's a choice you made in your life so far up to this point to be able to do something, to create something. It may not be artwork, it might be a special project or something about a job, but how did you get to doing something or making something that wasn't, you know, normal. It wasn't like I worked my 50 hours every week and I saved up and then I did this and we went there and we had this experience. If you have an experience of how you got to some place or created something from nothing or any story like that, share that now. Think about it and then please share it with your neighbor.
Carved
time.
I like photography.
Oh.
So I created some frames and I think things cut out frames.
I went back to school.
Picture frames. Some other photography photos that I take put that together. That was really neat. Something I could do on my own.
And then did you sell them?
No.
Or just for yourself.
Actually, I was doing work too. I worked for a
student. I must have done something. 17 and a half years. I'm just having a hard time. Junior. I wanted to be in design work. And I did work to switch and take design.
No, it's taking my time. Because it's really easy to get sidetracked.
I wanted to be able to help people who didn't have much money to be able to create attractive places to live.
Actually, at one point, I wanted until we started traveling. I wanted
without spending too much money.
Job.
Like,
but,
so selling antiques or something.
Well, what we're doing.
So, and then I was fortunate because my brother bought a furniture store in a town in Alberta. And so I went and worked there and I got to, I enjoyed decorating the windows. And I did that store and I also did, went out to homes and measured.
Not appreciating myself for it.
Materials. And,
This is like home that was some interior design.
So I was working in the furniture store and worked, you know, went out with them. And he's done lots of, he's built furniture. And he's always done. Built radios and when he was little, built airplanes and all kinds of things.
My work is now word of mouth.
I guess I could say it.
And he had to do it really in stages.
So it
never I always just working part time.
I didn't have a desire to do it.
I had no idea. Foggiest idea when I go to
I remember when I wanted to do it. In the summertime.
I went to technical school in Seattle.
First grade. And watched them have
taking book
and then because
that's wonderful.
Construction wasn't far enough along.
I guess I spent more time trying to figure out how to make things different, quit making work or something else, just to get something done. So he introduced me to a fellow down at IBM.
No.
My
friend. This was when IBM was very young.
Yeah. It was the same kind of carving.
No, we don't.
Well, just after World War II.
You do that.
Well, just before World War II. Yeah. It was about 38, 39.
Yeah.
And
do you know what this is?
So
it looks like alder. It's pretty hard. Isn't
I started working for IBM because
no,
this guy did kind of I know that in those days. I don't know if you're familiar with the punch cards. The machines were all controlled by wires.
This is what I did with Gary. I got him interested.
So that was more down my alley. So I ended up with a complete career in that area.
Yeah.
And worked at IBM for a while, and I went to Boeing. In the Army, I had machines and trailers, so it's part of the accounting.
Do you carry it around with you all the time, and you work on it when you can?
And I come out, and I have all the rest of my life groups, all the ways of computers, step by step by step.
Oh, that's wonderful.
So it was all from tinkering.
I'm going to find a piece of that, because my friend said that. That's so easy to carve.
Working graveyard shift at Boeing, I would get into the machines if something went down that wasn't in repair in hand. So I was tearing into the machines.
Well, do you have more time when you're up here?
Well, IBM in those days. And I got to the point where my boss told me, well, IBM came in and made some complaint about it.
Doing this.
Boss says, well, now don't let him. So see you when you
I wonder if you could work with clay if you were excited.
The IBM man came up to me and said, well, don't tell him you're doing anything.
You know, I love the carving and clay.
Well, I got blessed by both of them.
And then he retired, and everything changed the first week. And every week since, every bit of computer stuff has changed. And
just pushing, into soft clay, and obviously you can find that design.
So. Well, are you thinking having a hobby of photography?
I'm going to do chisels.
Yeah, I would like to.
And
I enjoy working on pictures.
Tiles where you
well, you can get such beautiful ones.
Very easily.
Equipment.
Obviously,
is really advanced.
That you have design quality and understanding of design.
Another minute or so, and then we'll move on
to show you some.
Is there anything else really you've ever thought about doing?
Well, I like drawing. Drawing landscapes, drawing. I like designing.
That's a neat idea.
So I'd like to design a house one day.
Oh. So would you like to go and take architecture?
I have taken one semester.
Did you like it? You liked it?
It was a little bit harder than this, and I switched to engineering.
Well, you almost need to be engineering to be an architect.
Well, they do so much now, don't they? All your machines with architecture too. Your blueprints and all that now, isn't that done?
Yeah, a lot of mechanics are done, so.
Yeah, it's getting short, but I was a planner as well.
So.
You know, family music.
It's gone into the machine world too. Of course, I guess it's a lot faster than when you have to do the drawings yourself. And you can still be creative.
Well, again, I know that there's more to say, and I have some more things for you to interact on, so I'm gonna move forward. But thank you, I'm eavesdropping on everyone, it's rather fun.
I noticed that.
So I think I say this for the real parents, for the caregivers in the audience, in this group, not on audience, in this gathering, because that's really a practical thing. Well, how do you don't have any benefits, you don't have any health insurance, you don't have any retirement, you don't have any paid sick days and all that kind of stuff. And I know my mother worries about me. But the longer I go around in this planet, the more I realize that I try not to have expectations and set myself up. And I really never have had the expectation of someone taking care of me, a company or the government, or I've never had dental insurance, so I'm just used to paying the dentist, whatever the bill is when I go to the dentist. I will have to say it's not a good idea to be at Holden for 2 years and never go to the dentist. It's really expensive when you finally go. Washington State, and I do not know how many other states have this. Minnesota had one, but it was really half to part. Washington State still has a basic health care plan, which is fabulous because self-employed people and underemployed people and all kinds of that, you can get health care. So that's one thing I'm not willing to go without, and I have friends who do. But that's a wonderful thing about living in the state of Washington. And the other thing I think, you probably have felt this too, whether it was a partner you were working with or your spouse, and you took a big chance at something, it makes a big difference to have a safety net. So I've always said that I weave a really wide web. I have friends throughout the country and a family farm that if the bottom dropped out, I could go back to the family farm. That's been a really tremendous gift to me because I have a big net. I imagine these people in the circus flying on the trapeze and wondering what they would do, what they could do if they didn't have that net under them. But that has been an important part of what keeps me willing to keep putting myself out there. And then retirement. Since I teach so many people who've just retired, we talk a lot about retirement. And then sometimes they ask me what I think, and I say, well, I don't think my generation, at least the middle class or the lower class, I don't think we will retire. I don't think that word maybe will be in existence. So that's why I've made it a point. Again, something to learn from Holden. At Holden, when you're on long-term staff, you get an out every 6 weeks. Is that still true? If you're on long-term staff, an out. And I realized after I left Holden a number of years later that I really need that. About every 6 weeks, I need a break. So what I try to do is I try to live my work and my play simultaneously all the time. I heard someone say today, I worked like crazy for 29 years, and I never took a day off, and I retired 5 years early. Someone said that today. She goes, that was the way to go for me. And I thought, oh, I'd be dead before the 26 years got there. So that's just something that I've always made a point of. Is I don't know if I'll ever get to retire. So I try to integrate work and play all the time. This is another one that is important for no matter what kind of work or how we live. But maintaining our health, and I think I look at that as a greater liability for myself, because I get really wrapped up in things and I just go for it, like a horse with blinders or a cow with a milking stall. And I forget to eat and I forget to sleep, and so I have to always keep checking myself. And discipline, we all know about all those disciplines. But especially when I'm trying to bring things out of myself, I find I can't just do the physical health or the mental and the spiritual go awry, or vice versa. So for me, it's the spiritual, the mental, and the physical all. I have to keep juggling this balance. So right now, I'd like you to share with your neighbor a practice or a discipline you are currently doing to sustain your emotional, your physical, or spiritual health so that you can do your creative work. Something. A practice or a discipline. Maybe you started it this week at Holden.
Yeah, I started some Japanese weaving.
You have Medicare?
I have one thing.
Is it Medicare?
I know.
I think taking time to use your senses. Sometimes I've just stopped and I've smelled the air and looked at the mountains and just took a second to take in.
That's good. Well, you need that for your
photography.
I do a lot of breathing.
So that's good.
Sketching.
Well,
preparing.
We have emotions every day.
Yeah,
it helps us, and we go to church every Sunday.
I don't know myself enough.
Sunday school, and we go to
Bible study
once a month or twice a month to a small group that studies. And then we belong to the Y, and we go exercise twice a week.
You sound busy. Well, in a sense.
Once I'm most of the day, that's it. And I envy that.
You kind of structure yourself for working, then whatever those time off, brief time off periods are, you do something. Once you retire, it's a whole different ballgame. Because you don't have any of those kind of responsibilities anymore. But then there's all these other things start doing. And pretty soon they're busier than you've ever been before. I keep telling people, all the time I work, I've managed some pretty large groups. I've never carried them out. Some people that, you know, they talk about one guy who carried the bridge in his pocket or something. But I can keep track of meetings, I can keep track of anything I have in 30 years. I can't keep track of anything. I keep a book and a note, and he says, what's next? Because there's always something. We're so unstructured that you can't, you know, in a work environment, you're more or less structured, so you know what to expect.
I've got some fairly.
So it all depends, you know. But the thing is, do something you like.
To get your degree.
In that?
Yeah.
Probably five.
Peter.
Oh, and you've already done how many?
Four.
Well, I mean, it's. There's so much, and things going so fast. But I think there's always a, for somebody who's interested in it, be innovative in the process, have every possibility of making a success out of it. But you have to stay, it's going to be a, stay on top of it all the time because things are moving too fast. It's like with the computer screen. I've installed the big monsters, everything else, run cables under floors. Today, I can't keep up with them anymore, even my little.
Okay, I'm going to keep the chain moving here.
Because I'm not talking to anybody.
So we've talked, and I've talked enough for a little bit, and this is the introduction I use when I'm giving presentations for believers, and it's how I like to share what I, my, the artistic work that I have done, and for me it's very important that my work be rooted to who I am and where I came from, and you'll see that. If you really want to know specifically what I do, you just talk to me, but I'm more interested in getting some of these ideas around here together, so I'm not going to give you the whole list. The group you're going to hear, though, is my group Straw into Gold. And I formed this group to do a concert when I did my thesis weaving show, and we stayed together and made 5 CDs and had a great time. And you'll hear the harmony for me that's the important thing in this little presentation here.
Farmhouse, there's a bridge.
Bob's been reading us poetry from Wendell Berry this week, so this is one of my favorites. To save your ball, Quentin, could I ask you to turn off the LCD?
Sure.
The new relationships are the most important thing, no matter what we're doing. And many artists I know are really independent. We want to do it ourselves. In fact, my mother tells me when I was just 3 years old, my favorite line was, "I do it myself." I don't remember this, but she tells me. And interestingly enough, coming up on the boat last Saturday, I was in line, all these Suzuki kids were around. I was talking to a parent, Suzuki parent, and she asked me if I had children. And I said, "No, I don't have any children." She goes, "Oh, are you an artist?" I said, "Yeah." Oh, I know lots of artists who don't have children. I thought, oh, I know lots of artists who do have children. But I decided early on that my desire to make things and create things and be co-creative with people and stuff was so great that I decided not to have children. But that was a funny thing for her to say. I've had a really important mentor in my life, numbers of mentors, but Joyce Harter is a weaver in Northfield, Minnesota, and I met her when I was doing a video when I was doing my journalism degree, and she became my friend. We became co-authors. We share, we talk very, very often. She's now 81 years old, and she passed the torch to me a while ago, and now she asks me for advice, and it always kind of startles me. What do you think I would know the answer to this, Joyce? But I think that mentor relationship, and that's a hot word right now, mentoring. You can get grants for mentoring programs. But it's a very real thing. It's a very real relationship that if everyone had a mentor and could be a mentor, we could be so much more connected. So I would like you to share with your neighbor someone in your life up to this point who's been a mentor, or if you have been a mentor for someone else, share just a little bit about that. Perhaps name them and what they gave you or what you gave as a mentor.
My wife was a mentor for me for quite a while.
Yeah.
Then that's good.
Now my daughter.
How did your wife mentor you?
I had
a sister.
I haven't really thought about that, but spouses.
See, I was the 10th child, and my mother was when I was born. Not too enthusiastic.
Just like gymnastics
in those
days.
So,
for
that
time,
it was
good.
I think she was 85, couldn't raise me, but he was very stuffy. And then my older sister,
and so was still.
You did everything that
was
worth
it. She was
26 years older than I am.
So much with my art. He tried to get me. He did.
To where I was living. Just helped me
trying to get some scholarships all
because I was someone younger to talk to. And,
it was really
to tell me to
really
get off my duff and do something.
And he still does.
Yeah, I was junior high kids.
That helped a lot.
And then my little, and I always felt like if I had some issue with the care, I told him, and like, I'd let you read that letter. I'd like to be able to have kids. And that one was one.
Telling me I wasn't
that
cut off for that.
Feel like I mentored her this weekend.
I've had.
Well, I was just trying to think that it passed away.
Supervisors, individual ones.
I think that
kind of taking me under their wing one way or another. Guided me around.
Some of the people don't accept it.
They became personal friends as well. It was only at work.
The guy's name was Albert Black.
Professor. Yeah. I had three or four of them. That was sort of shaped my taste.
Went on for
being able to just go in and sit down and get something off your chest once in a while without worrying about, you know, exceptionally any company rules or anything else. But be personal friends on the job, to me, what a nice credit, right? And to tell you if you're wrong or pat you on the back if you're right.
I don't know if I was one of the things or if it was specific to the document.
Sort of down.
We helped each other.
It was special.
Yeah, and
got on board.
Some older classmates. And then a teacher, a couple teachers that would advise me.
Always load up his car. Continue to go back to those.
He was a bachelor. And so.
More.
He had no.
Those were good.
Interested in each other.
Much needed to school on what to take, what to take.
Well, I think to me that's the most important.
Yeah, you could make decisions on.
How many of the time?
The classes.
Yeah.
Go to a concert.
And then in work, like you, Ralph.
A few classes.
Then lots, have some.
I just took one class.
Colleagues that I worked with that were also friends, give advice. And then through the church.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you get that kind of relationship. And it's not a case of, well, that's the boss and that boy, you know, whatever. You're busy friends, you're probably in that. And you can dump on them and they'll dump on you too.
And was that when you met him in there?
And that really, it means a lot. Work experience is one of always having to satisfy some hierarchy or something along the way. Everyone's probably want to unload somewhere.
No, don't you think when you do the mentoring, you get around size and age?
Wonderful.
I do.
Girl.
I do. And I've noticed with my art,
they're just really helping me a lot.
They're so
creative. Because, you know, my mother was
they give me ideas.
Heck, when I got married, she was,
they break their rules.
No, you don't.
I mean, there's never been.
You know, she had enough trouble taking care of herself because my father had died.
Breaking.
You know, at 35. And
Charlotte.
So she was alone. She just had, I remember her telling me one time, you know, all I seem to be able to do is to look after myself. And I couldn't figure out.
Oh, she's got very high students.
But as you get older,
the last Wittenberg students.
You begin to realize you really have to take care of yourself.
She was a freshman.
Oh, she was
to do it for you.
It's definitely a.
Remember to take your bills and remember to take your doctor's appointments. Remember to get there.
Really?
And,
15. Or 16 or something.
Life, it has really been hard for me for life to change. I came down with rheumatoid arthritis and that has made a tremendous difference in my life. It never occurred to me, you know, I was the baby of the family. I wasn't going to get anything.
What nationality?
No, it slowed me down. Luckily, I've got Ralph that. A wonderful hell. One of the hardest things is I've lost all my brothers and sisters. All nine of them are gone. All my aunts and my uncles and now I lost.
Well, that's what my grandmother was spent on.
Three of my best friends. And that's hard. Now I'm starting to lose my nieces and nephews, and I seem to have been practically the time I was 10 years old. I seem to have been coping with death. Just, you know, first my father, and then was my girlfriend. I took dancing lessons with, and then somebody else, and then it's just really gone on and on. I remember my mother telling me she lived to be 95, and I remember her saying, it's so hard, I don't recall my friends.
Kind of a slam from the old days, saying you're Dutch when you're
when you have them and enjoy them, because because it's really things are real quickly.
That's a punished word.
They could disappear.
Director of Communications for the Village Children Council.
Olden's been wonderful for us because we started here in the 60s and brought our two boys up. We've come a lot. There was a period of time when we didn't come when he was building a cabin in Montana. And so we had to go over there. And, but that was wonderful. It was good for him to be out away from the office and building instead of doing office work. And that was good. So, but then it got, it was too far. We couldn't get it. We had to sell. So this is so beautiful here that it makes up for it.
We ever get there before it's
snowing. Where do you live?
A lot of times they use it for Russian trucks when you travel.
Where do you live at night?
Tri-Cities, County School.
Being aware that we now have started conversations that you might not needed to know you needed to have with these people, I'm going to encourage you to continue them. However, I want to be honor our time so you have time to do something, bathroom, tea, whatever you need before worship. So. Yeah, and all the rest of my stuff I'm skipping because your conversation was more important. I do want to say just a couple of things in closing. I would love it if we had more multi-generations here, but I know, because I was at staff meeting last night, and I know it's always been a big part of especially younger people and not so young people coming to Holden Village on the staff, short-term, long-term, is many of them are looking for the right vocation. The way to live their passion outside of Holden. And I have a lot more questions. I have a sheet here, 5 sheets actually, that kind of go with this and can help you with dialogue, or maybe you have a granddaughter or people in your life, and as a way to initiate conversation about this kind of a thing. So you're free to take one of those. And I spend most of my time, believe it or not, sitting in front of a computer trying to get gigs and promoting and writing things and figuring out what I'm going to sell on my website. But one of my favorite promotion tools is food, because I love to cook. It's a great way to
cook. You would never know it. It doesn't look like more than 2 calories passed down your throat a day.
Well, they do. They do. So I've always found the Holden hospitality, too, you know, often involves the food. So I use that all over the place I go. I give away food at conferences. It's a great way to capture people long enough for them to get in a conversation and see if they'll tell you your story. So these don't have peanuts. They do have butter and oil. It's not organic, but the eggs are organic. So anyway, have one if you like. Pecan almond sandies.
Oh my God.
And then I want to take home a I want to close with this. Thank you. Thank you for coming and sharing and listening.
Thank you.
I hope this is just the start of a more continued dialogue, and tell me your stories. Come and I'm here a few more days, and come up and talk to me. I pulled something about music out of Carol today, and Naomi and Ralph have been gurus at, not gurus, they've been my students. So we've been learning some things, but I would love to have a conversation and hear about how you're living your creativity out in life. The Irish have a word called Nioch. And I don't speak Irish Gaelic, but that's pretty close, Nioch. It means the core of a thing, Nioch. The essence that can't be defined. And musicians say that the Nioch of a player comes through only in his or her playing. Right there, live, in front of you. So I want to close by playing a tune. Although I was really challenged this morning, I was reminded human being versus human doing. That's always my struggle. I'm more often the human doing and not often the human being. So a little chance for you to be here before we go to Vespers. For me, making music and making things, they're connected by the rhythm that's inherent in both of those activities. And that's a touchstone to my creativity. Please share with me more and share with people out there more about this creative life we're living.